Good morning. Good morning. So, good. So this morning I'm going to continue talking about a Chinese case, Chinese Zen case, and Dogen's commentary on it. This is my second talk on this because we've been in retreat this weekend, so I gave a talk yesterday morning as well. So the case is called Shaoshan's Love Between Parent and Child. And yesterday I talked about the case itself and some about the commentary. And today I'm going to talk about the rest of the commentary and the capping verse. And for those of you who are new to Zen, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. That's okay. It would take me the whole time to explain what a case is and what a capping verse is. So just don't worry about it. Okay? So anyway, I will read the case, although I will not comment on it because I did that yesterday. And the commentary and then later the capping verse. So we may be here for a while. Maybe you'd better stretch before you even get started here. So, Shaoshan was once asked by a monk. A child went back to her parent. Why didn't the parent pay attention to her? Shaoshan said, "It is quite natural just like that." The monk said, "Then where is the love between parent and child?" Shaoshan said, "The love between parent and child." The monk said, "What is the love between parent and child?" Shaoshan said, "It cannot be split apart even when you hit it with an axe." Now the commentary. At the time, this commentary by Dogen. How many hundred years later? 300 to 400 years later, okay? At the time of birth, parent and child become each other. This means that in the middle of the night, before the moon has appeared, do not be surprised if people meet without knowing each other. It's in your program. At this point, the empty sky has vanished and the Iron Mountain has crumbled. There is not an inch of ground to stand on. Be that as it may, still mountains are high and valleys are low. Thus, Shaoshan says, the love between parent and child neither arises nor vanishes. How can they be divided into fragments and segments? All this notwithstanding, how is it that parent and child can meet and yet not know each other? So, yesterday I talked about the fact that parent and child are a metaphor for any set of dualities. Me and you, sky and earth, today and yesterday, before and after, they're a metaphor for any dualities. But parent and child are used specifically as this metaphor because biologically they're undivided. They're undivided. And really, from a Zen point of view, everything is undivided. But it's pretty easy for us to get the lack of division between parent and child. Often, with our own kids, we may forget it, but it's there. Or with our own parents, we may forget it, but it's there. Biologically, and it's there intrapsychically with all life. So this is a kind of a biological metaphor, simple biological metaphor that we can all understand. So, in the commentary, first part of the commentary, which I did talk about yesterday, at the time of birth, parent and child become each other. This means that in the middle of the night, before the moon has appeared, do not be surprised if people meet without knowing each other. At this point, the empty sky has vanished and the Iron Mountain has crumbled. There's not an inch of ground to stand on. Well, this has to do with, as I was saying yesterday, with what happens when we immerse ourselves in meditation. It doesn't happen when we want it to happen. It just comes on its own. But when we immerse ourselves in meditation, as some of us have been doing for, this is our second day, and we do it a lot here because this is what Zen is about, really. We immerse ourselves in meditation to the point that the sense of self and other vanishes. It vanishes. When we chant in the morning, we say, no eye, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Well, literally, that vanishes. When there's a real samadhi, samadhi means deep concentration. And a lot of people think, oh, you can't get that in meditation. Maybe the old people could do that, the ancient people, when they just lived in monasteries and they didn't have to deal with George Bush and Hennepin and Lake and at rush hour and all that stuff. But that's not our teaching. Our teaching is that's always available. Those good old days are now. I mean, there's always those good old days. They're now. If they're going to be any time, they're now. And so that we have that potential. So that's why I want people to come to these retreats that I lead. We have them every month now. Some people think it's too much. We have no monastic community here. If you want to merge with this incredible hugeness, you've got to meditate. You've got to meditate. You've got to get away and just be with your breath, be with your body, focusing. So we have the expression in Zen, which many of you know very well, first, mountains and mountains and rivers are rivers. Then, mountains are not mountains. Rivers are not rivers. That's what he's talking about here. Before the moon arises. Before the moon arises. No differentiation. Total identity. It sounds mystical. I don't know if it's mystical. Just do it. Forget about mystical. That's just adding something. And you think, oh, I can't do it. Oh, yes, why not? Why can't you? I don't know why not. Because of your karma? Oh, well, we all have all that karma. My first grade teacher is always yakking at me about how I should write with my right hand. Well, you've got that karma. In those days, we weren't allowed to write with our left hands. What's a poor boy like me going to do? Write hieroglyphics, basically. My own version, which I've been doing ever since. We've all got that karma. We've all got those anxieties. We all have those fears from endless paths. But we can do this. We can merge until there's, we don't know, total non-differentiation. Mountains are not mountains and rivers are not rivers. Total quiescence. Absolute quiescence. Not mine. Not yours. Always available. Continually available. This means that in the middle of the night, before the moon has appeared, do not be surprised if people meet without knowing each other. During these retreats, we don't talk with each other. Well, fewer and fewer people are talking with each other. That's good. Some of you still try to communicate somehow. Well, you got to communicate a little, but commune. If you know how to commune, then communication is okay. Not okay. Do not be surprised that people meet without knowing each other. At this point, the empty sky has vanished and the iron mountain has crumbled. The intangible spaciousness is gone and the solidity of phenomena is gone. Lake Calhoun is dried up. Nothing there. This building is... Gate, gate. Well, it's just your mind anyway. Right? Some people call this the second phase of Zen practice. Well, then everybody measures what phase will I ever get to the second phase. Oh, so don't pay too much attention to this phase stuff. Nevertheless, there is a psychological movement, a psychological change that has these. That has these. Oh, they happen in their own way, you know. They don't follow the formula. Nothing follows the formula. How could it? The formula comes afterwards. So, in this no differentiation, there's no awakening. There's no realization. But then Dogen says, at this point, the empty sky has vanished and the iron mountain has crumbled. There's not an inch of ground to stand on. Then he says, be that as it may, mountains are high and valleys are low. So this is maybe the third phase, depending on whether you believe the sense stuff. Right? This is phenomena as expressing the stillness, as expressing the absolute, as expressing the non-differentiation. So this morning when I came here, on a Sunday morning, bright and early, usually dark on Sunday morning at what time? I got here at 5:39 or something. I set my clock at a certain time, maybe 5:41. What did I see in the sky? What did you guys see in the sky this morning at 5:31, those of you who were there with me? Huh? Huge! Everything was illuminated. The car on the street in front of me where I parked was just radiating. It was just glowing with the light of the moon. I just looked at it. I forgot for a few minutes I was supposed to be going in the Zendo. And by that it was 5:44. And I had to then run into the Zendo. Late for a very important date. The moon is our symbol for realization, for awakening to all the phenomena being a manifestation of this great stillness. This is your foundation of your life, and you may not know it. But it is. It's the foundation of all life. Why not yours? You're an exception because of your anxiety. Okay, you make yourself an exception if you want. But that's your thing. It ain't Buddha's thing. Right? So mountains are high and valleys are low. The Calhoun building is the Calhoun building. And the love between, back to the original metaphor, the love between parent and child neither arises nor vanishes. It cannot be split, even if you hit it with an axe. Even if you hit it with an axe, it can't be split. That love that permeates, that penetrates all life. There's no division in that love. There's no division. How could there be? The heart is completely open, completely available. The love between the parent and child neither arises nor vanishes. It cannot be split, even if you hit it with an axe. We know this. And we forget it. We forget it. And then we practice some more so we can remember it again. Remember it again. And again, the metaphor of the family, I think it's a pretty good metaphor. Those guys are pretty smart. Even though they didn't have families, you know. Well, they had fathers, but they didn't have kids. They didn't have wives. They didn't really know. They didn't know much. Anyway, the relationship between two people, So, with my own father, whom I've talked about a lot, we had really hard times. Many of us have had hard times with our fathers. Really hard times. It seemed like there was an axe splitting our relationship. And he thought what I was doing was crazy. And this stuff was crazy. This stuff that I do all the time, this sitting and this, you know, crazy. A poor man. And it seems severed. Our relationships with our friends, with the world, so often seem severed. It seems split, and there's just bleeding going on, just heartache going on, just distress going on. We forget, flesh of my flesh, but not just the parent and the child. All of us, flesh of our flesh. One interdependent, undivided flow, shape-shifting way. I'm sorry it's shape-shifting so fast, you guys. I'm sorry for you. But get used to it. Get used to it. That's what Zen is about, getting used to it. So, my father and I were alienated. I didn't want to be alienated. I thought it was his fault. And you know what he thought? It was my fault. Ever see that happen in a human interaction? Ever notice that? He was the person who really wasn't in the contemporary world. He was back in the old days. I was in the contemporary world. I was a hip California 60s guy. My poor father was a staid, conservative, materialistic lawyer. You know about those people, don't you? Stay away from them. Right? Right? We do this, right? All the time. All the time. So you know when my father and I began to develop a relationship? When he got so sick that he didn't have any choice. And I was the only one. Then we began. When he was in his late 80s. His late 80s, we began to develop a relationship. We began to feel... to just put all that stuff aside. Just put all that stuff aside. And feel the non-differentiation. If you can do it with one person, you can do it with everybody. You can do it with everybody. Just have to do it with one person. And just let it radiate. It radiates. It radiates. So a couple years ago, I was in the hospital, as some of you know. I was in the hospital after sitting here in meditation one morning and falling over on my head. I was in the hospital, and who came to see me every day? My son, whom I'm not very close to. And I felt so moved. so moved. There he was every day. He had all these things to do. He was just there. He was just there. So that possibility exists always. It's not just a parent and child. It's me and you. It's the two of you. It's the three of us. To just be here and let the moon of radiance shine. Just let it shine. As I've said, Dogen talks about when the moon is full, it radiates. When it's a half moon, it radiates. When it's a quarter moon, it radiates. And when it's no moon, it really radiates. Because it's still there. It's still there. So we are very close, you and I. We are very close, each of us. Our heartbeats, is the heartbeat of all life. This heartbeat right here. Feel it. It's the heartbeat of all life. So once we begin to understand the identity of these polarities, father and son, self and other, good and bad, hatred and love, once we begin to understand their commonality, their identity, well, our life can settle down a little bit. We can just be a little bit more accepting of our own inadequacies, how we treat ourselves and how others treat us, because we have a little bigger perspective. And when we have a conflict at work, a conflict at home, we can bring that awareness just into that conflict. Just into that conflict. And we can experience that the everyday mind is the Buddha mind. For years, I've talked about this before, years I thought, oh, that's a cute, the everyday mind is the Buddha mind. That's cute. Those clever Zen guys. But it ain't my everyday mind. That's what I would say to myself. I said that for myself, practicing Zen for 10 years. Okay, they can say that, but it's not my everyday mind. My everyday mind is just a garbage can. It's just a garbage can. Who knows what garbage is going to go into it next? Not my everyday mind. But yes, your everyday mind, your depressed mind is the Buddha mind, just as it is. Your anxious mind is the Buddha mind, just as it is. Non-differentiation. So now I want to talk about the capping verse, Dogen's capping verse. Why must yin and yang be placed in an arrangement? If you do, you will never have today. When the wind blows, the grasses bend. When the rain comes, the river fills. Why must yin and yang be placed in an arrangement? If you do, you will never have today. When the wind blows, the grasses bend. When the rain comes, the river fills. So placing yin and yang in an arrangement. Well, this is China. We're in China here, right? Although Dogen wrote this, he knows classical Chinese. He knows about yin and yang. He knows about the whole philosophy of yin and yang. Many of you know about a little bit about the I Ching. How many of you know about the I Ching? A little bit. Yeah, almost everybody. See, this is a This is a different group than if we went to the Greek Orthodox Church and stuff. A different group. Luckily, because I don't have to tell you about the I Ching. So, why must yin and yang be placed in an arrangement? In the I Ching, yin and yang, they're the yin lines and the yang lines, remember? Those feminine lines and those masculine lines, they're placed in these arrangements, in these hexagrams. It's all set up. It's all arranged. You just go to the I Ching. You want help? You do the yarrow stalks or the coin method. And, hey, I did this for a long time, right? I think I'll do it after retreat. I had to figure out how to deal with you guys. So I'll deal with myself dealing with you guys. So this is a way, Dogen commenting on the I Ching. Really, that's my take on it. I mean, I don't really know, but that's my take on it. Now you've heard my talk. Now you want to make an arrangement. Oh, the arrangement is, maybe I'm going to do this practice, and I can move from mountains or mountains and valleys or valleys to mountains or mountains and not valleys or valleys. Wow, that's cool. And then back to just mountains. Wow, I want to do this. I'm going to make an arrangement. I'm arranging my mind already in that way. Let's arrange it. And then you go out to your car and it doesn't start. Or you get home and your partner flips you the bird. Where'd your arrangement go, honey? Better get another arrangement out. More I Ching. You got to carry that I Ching with you all the time. The problem is you put it down. You leave it. You got to carry it with you. Put it in your pocket. You got to always cast it because this arrangement is always getting out of sync. It's shape-shifting on me. Why must yin and yang be placed in an arrangement? If you do this, you will never have today. You will never have this moment. You will never have it. It'll have you. Where's my I Ching? Oh, you're had. It's got you. It's got you by the you-know-what. Yeah. Even if you don't have the you-know-what, it's still got you. Why must yin and yang be placed in an arrangement? If you do this, you will never have today. When the wind blows, the grass is bent. When the rain comes, the river fills. When I read this, I think yesterday when I read it, I read these a lot of times before I give these talks. But yesterday when I read it, I thought, why must yin and yang be placed in arrangement? Reminds me of, this is of my free association, right? That reminds me of playing croquet. Why it reminds me of playing croquet, I don't know. Oh, that reminds me of Alice in Wonderland trying to play croquet. So if you know about Alice in Wonderland, you know that as a good English child, she was taught how to play croquet. She came from a middle-class environment, upper-middle-class environment, Alice Little, and they played croquet in the backyard on the nice lawn. Everything was arranged, right? But what happens in Alice in Wonderland when she tries to play her croquet? She gets her mallet. What's her mallet? Do you remember? Yes. Her mallet won't behave. It won't stay in arrangement. And then she gets her ball, and what's her ball? Yeah. So playing croquet with a flamingo and a hedgehog. That's our lives, you guys. That's our lives. That's our lives. I know you'd like something different, but you better get used to it if you're going to stick around this earth for a while. Maybe you just want to exit this earth. I know you feel like exiting this earth sometimes. We all do. It's hard with those flamingos and hedgehogs doing their own thing when we're just trying to play our game of croquet, just trying to be a good player, just trying to follow the rules and get through the little deal, get the ball through so that we can be there with other people and don't feel too isolated. And of course, we want to win the croquet game too, but forget that. So, we can make a choice. We have choices. We can do choices to make do meditation. But even if we don't do much meditation, we can make choices just in our minds. We can make choices to see two people, two things, two experiences as separate or as part of one dynamic flow. We have that choice. We can do that just with our minds, even if you don't want to sit because you're too scared or too lazy or too busy. You can still do this with your mind. You can make this choice moment to moment. Moment to moment. And in Buddhism, right understanding and right thought, not right as contrasts are wrong, but right thought is making the choice to remind yourself that we're all part of this shape-shifting, interdependent flow. And when the anger comes up, it's a manifestation of that. It's nothing else. We don't have to hang on to it. When the anxiety comes up, it's just that. It's just that. When the bliss comes up, it's just that. Not something to get all wooed about. So, in Zen practice, two really main emphasis. One is concentrative meditation. That's what I asked people to do yesterday. Concentrative meditation. Trying to slow down the mind enough so that we bridge this artificial gap that we've created between self and other. And that is right concentration on the Eightfold Path. So that's the eighth of the eighth. But its complementary partner is bare attention, is mindfulness. And through the concentration, through the one-pointedness of our sitting, we can get a taste of non-differentiation. But even then, we need to practice the bare attention, because in this world there are always polarities, there are always dualities. Even though they're changing, there always is me and you. There always is up and down. There always is separation. And that's the bare attention part. That's the mindfulness part. But that bare attention, that mindfulness, brings us to the non-differentiation too, but the non-differentiation within differentiation. Within differentiation, as differentiation. And it's a little tricky and a little difficult and kind of sticky. And I've been talking about this lately, this practice of bare attention. Trying to give you just a little bit of technique, but not too much technique, because then you try to make an arrangement out of it. And the hedgehogs start hedgehogging, and the flamingos start flamingoing, and your croquet game goes to hell. But an example, because people like me to give examples. So I think about examples. But I'm a good boy. I don't think about examples when I'm doing zazen. I wait till I'm up in my study. Pretty good. I'm pretty good at that. Somebody should give me a star. I think my father will give me a star now. Finally, now that he's gone. So bare attention is the common, because we go around concentrating, meditating, but the world is separate. Stuff is coming up. Sure, the moon is shining on everything, but even if you're a great meditator, you forget that sometimes. You immediately forget that sometimes. Well, here we are in retreat. I've been sitting pretty calmly for, is this a day and a half we've been sitting? I've been sitting without too much in my mind. A few things coming in and out, but they don't stay long. No, then I get outside, right? And I go home in my little car. My ecological car. I'm driving 3 blocks in my ecological car. Instead of walking. Oh, I'm a good boy. We're such good environmentalists, aren't we? Driving 3 blocks home in my ecological car after retreat. They open my back door. I'm going to my kitchen. And I see a little note there. And what it is it has the items for dinner, the items that Linda is cooking for dinner. And as a sudden awareness dawns on me that I promised to get the groceries for dinner. Because she cooks, and all I have to do is get the groceries. You think I could do that, right? I've been gone all weekend. I should be clear. I should be... Remember to do one little thing. There I am in my kitchen. And there's the list, and I hear my wife in the living room. Well, what's there? Well, some felt sense, not okay, right? Can I just pay attention to that? Not okay? Just pay attention to it. What's there? What's there? If my meditation is good for anything, it's got to be good for there. What's the point of sitting here if it's not good for there? So there it is. And if I stay with it for a tiny bit of time, I know right away it's fear. It's fear. It doesn't take long. How long does it take to realize it's fear? All the karma ever created by me. Really? And then my bare attention. I feel it. I experience it. I let it be there as the fear. And then I see it. I see what I'm saying about it. The fact that I realize that I see the fear is good because it means that I'm not repressing it or denying it. So that's pretty good. That means that at least I'm not on automatic immediately when I leave the Zen Center. That means I'm at least, well, still when I walk in the kitchen door, I'm still kind of able just to be with this. So I see it without automatically repressing it or denying it. And then, can I see what my thoughts start doing with it? Can I see that? Can I see how they start either magnifying it or generalizing it, or sometimes both, or sometimes something else entirely? Can I see that? And if I can see that, if I can see my thoughts saying, oh God, here I go again. Linda is really going to be angry. How could I do that? Should I try to sneak out of the house? She probably heard me already. And it's already 5 o'clock. Oh, what am I going to do? Oh, and then I did that thing on Friday. And then the week before. And what am I doing? I'm generalizing and I'm magnifying. And then I'm to the point where, God, I'm just being a little bit facetious here. Oh, God, she should just divorce me. After, I've been married more than 40 years, But I'm a human being. I'm a human being. And Zazen will not make you perfect. It will not. It will make you any more perfect than you are now. If you want to be more perfect than you are now, do some other religion. Do some I Ching religion. Do the I Ching religion. But good luck, honey. Good luck. In the very end, good luck with that I Ching religion. I'm not meaning to put down the I Ching. The I Ching is wonderful. I'm going to cast it very sternly. And if I just see all that, then it goes. The minute I see it, it's gone. And that is wonderful shape-shifting. Because then I can just go in and apologize with some lightness. With some lightness. Not too much lightness. Because I did pretty much, screw her dinner up. So, but enough lightness so that I don't say, da-da-da-da-da. I'm awful, and what can I... Gee, Linda, I'm sorry I did this again. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. It was... I just don't know. I don't know how to change it. I mean, I'm sure you're tired of trying to help me change it. And then it's over. But nothing is ever over. Everything continues. The shapes are shifting. The relationships are continuing. So if you say it's over, it's not. But it is over. Because there's infinite possibility. Those flamingos are taking great shape. Pretty soon they're going to fly. You can fly with them. You may not go under the little deal. You can go around it with the flamingos. Infinite possibility. Because non-differentiation within separation, shape shifting away. Okay, got it now? Got it? Let's see. I guess I could take one or... Let's see, what time is it? Yeah, I could take one or two questions.
What did you have for dinner?
What did I have for dinner? Oh. Well, I made this story up. Oh. See, this story it comes out of all of the times I have done this to my wife. All of the times. And, the other day, I'll tell you another story. The other day, Linda said to me in the morning, she said, well, you have a busy day. You should probably take your lunch. And I said, yeah, I should take my lunch. She said, there's some leftovers in the refrigerator. And, there's a bag there. You can put them in the bag. So I got my leftovers out of the refrigerator. And I put them in the bag. And I set my lunch out there. And Linda said, well, set it by the door. I set it by the door. And then, of course, I didn't see it when I went out. And I came home, and there was my lunch. And I said to Linda, there it is. She said, yes, there it is. And she said, well, of course, we know. And I said, this has been going on now for 40 years. And she said, oh, much longer than that. So I don't know why I told you that story. That's a real story. Anything else this morning? Anybody got anything?
Yeah.
Sure.
I get a kick out of people who complain that if everybody was the same, it'd be really boring.
Ah.
And I think the fact is, I stated 99.7% of us genetically are similar.
Hmm. That's pretty good.
Can I blame it on market forces?
Oh, you blame it on capitalism? Well, what about, what would Chuang Tzu have blamed it on then?
I'm kind of joking about putting it on.
Sure,
but
sure.
Obviously, we can see
sure.
the noise that it made about
sure.
our differences,
sure.
our distinctions.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Yeah, that's good. So Suzuki Roshi used to talk in a lot about this undividedness, only he would just say same. Everything is same, you know. Everything is same. And after a while, someone said to him, well, Sensei, I'm getting tired of you talking about everything being the same all the time. You know, you're 4'10", you're Japanese, I'm 6'2", I'm American. You want to do things in this formal style. I like to smoke dope. What do you mean everything's the same? And what he said was, well, I have to teach everything's the same because you don't know it. If you knew everything was different, then I would teach. If you knew everything was the same, then I would teach you everything is different.